to order. Time is 10:15. It's the 15th of November here in Anchorage, Alaska. Present for the record are Representatives Guerra, Coghill, Anderson, and myself, McGuire. We do have a quorum to conduct business. For the record, Representative Kott's staff is online, representing him, Judy Ulmer. And Representative Gruenberg is en route. He got hung up. He should be here shortly. Representative Dahlstrom had a commitment at one of her local schools. And then I'm also told online for listen only, Dave Donaldson is online with the press, Randy Ruro from the governor's office, Representative Berkowitz's office, and the Matsu LIO, Gino LIO, and Homer LIO are also listen only. So, without further ado, as I've talked to individual members, but just to explain for so that the record is clear, today is not a hearing on Senate Bills 186 and 187 per se. Rather, this interim meeting is meant to be an opportunity to have a work session for this committee to look at what we can put together in the way of an ethics bill for this upcoming legislature. The reason that the Senate bills are before us is because they were the two bills that arrived on our desk in Judiciary at the end of the session and set the stage for much discussion in the public over the summer and interim. And so I think having them before us as a way of defining the issue is important. What I hope we do is come up with a work product, then where we go with that, whether we're going to try to roll it in to a Senate bill or whether we come up with our own judiciary bill can be a separate discussion. But I really felt it was important that we spend some time looking at ethics and that you know, we let the public know that it wasn't our intent last session to sort of leave town and not get through the bill. We got it so late, there really wasn't the time to work through it. But we think it's a really important issue, and particularly in light of the Greg Rinka situation, that we think there ought to be some discussion of what those bright line rules are. So we also have, today we don't have testimony, but Joyce Anderson from the Ethics Committee is here to answer questions. So, and Representative Gruenberg has joined us. And Representative Wilson, come join us at the table. She's come in. And any other members, if you see them, send them up here. There's plenty of room. So, Max, we just were getting started. And just announcing that it's a very informal work session today to try to come up with a product to address the issues that we can out of the ethics. And I know Representative Guerra, why don't we go ahead and start with Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, the three of us started talking just informally. We had a little bit of a conversation. My personal view on the ethics situation is that this all came out of the Greg Rankus affair. You know, he owned, what was it, $100,000 worth of KFX stock, and the question was whether or not he should have been negotiating a deal that involved KFX. And what came out of it were two opinions, one from Tom Daniel for the ethics board, one from Bob Bundy for the governor. Both of them said, regardless of what the law says now, it might be a little bit vague, the one thing that we think you need to change is to explain to people what is a significant interest that you might have, and therefore you have to disqualify yourself from action on a matter, and what's called an insignificant interest. And if it's insignificant, you don't have to disqualify yourself. And, you know, just briefly, as we all remember, the question was whether the Greg Enkus's stock ownership was considered significant or not, and the law was not particularly clear. So Senator French and I have filed, he has a Senate companion bill, mine is HB 194, We said, let's just deal with that one shortcoming in the law. Let's not address these other issues about open meetings and closed meetings and penalties on people who file ethics complaints that are addressed by Senator Seekin's bill. Let's just deal with the one issue that I think we all probably agree with needs to be addressed. And so So what other states do is they say, well, we should draw, they draw a bright line generally. It's an insignificant interest if it's, let's say, less than $5,000 or let's say less than $10,000. And there can be good debate about which one of those numbers we should pick. But I think we should just deal with that issue. I think we should probably also make clear that if it's an interest, and the law attempts to do this, we might be, add some words. You might own, let's say, I'll just pick a business, a mail house. As a legislator, you own a mail house. We might pass a law on the minimum wage. It's clear in all our minds that an executive employee should be able to sort of work on that minimum wage bill, even though they have an interest in a mail house that maybe would be subject to the minimum wage. And so the law, the way it reads, is if it's an interest that many, many other people share, that's not an interest that disqualifies you. But we might want to add some words to make clear that when you have an interest that's very general like that in a personal business, it's one thing for you to work on a minimum wage law. It's another thing for you to work on a contract that deals with that business, and that's the line that we want to draw. So that might be the only other area we should take a look at.
And on that point, I think that's another, and I just have spent some time in the interim just talking with constituents about that. And, you know, and we have a citizen-based legislature. We want legislators to work. At least that has been the desire of the public so far. And yet, inevitably, conflicts can arise when you do work outside the legislature with the things you do inside. And I think it's worthy of discussion how you handle those conflicts. The way it works now, a member will state that conflict in a committee or on the floor and then ask to be recused from voting. And the response is always, no, we object to that and we'd like you to vote. I wonder if there's more that could or should be done in that area. So, Representative Garrett?
I wasn't necessarily going to bring that up, but that's the whole issue of legislative ethics, right? And I suppose we could do a bill that deals with legislative, as the bill started out as just an executive ethics bill, but we could do both. And I feel strongly about this, that exactly what you said, legislators need to have work outside of the legislature. The times that the public asks questions is when legislators do, let's say, consulting work for a business that has an interest in legislation, right? And I think what you should probably do, instead of saying which kind of jobs people can have and which kind they can't, I think what you should probably do is require the legislators disclose in detail what they do for those businesses so that, you know, if they're not doing anything wrong, everybody knows it. But we've sort of crafted some language if we want to go into the legislative ethics issue, but there has been some press this summer about, you know, folks who do consulting work. I think that on an hour-by-hour basis, the legislators should just say, this is what I did. And then when they haven't really done anything that relates to stuff they're working on, the public knows. But I think that would be the way to do it, instead of trying to regulate what kind of jobs they can have and what kind of jobs they can't have.
Through the chair, Representative, do you think that, because I know you've studied this more than most of us, do you think that currently there's a lot of gray area and that's why a bill is really necessary? Because of the past few years, there's been some targeted individuals who at least have been centered upon doing, and we know some of those in the press, who have done contract work, and there's really not statutory language that spells that out. So it's unclear for the legislators, and you think that, I mean, are you thinking about sponsoring legislation this next session to kind of define?
I think we should leave it up to the committee. I wouldn't do a separate bill. Maybe we can do a separate bill. What the law says now is, you know, if you have a consulting contract for, let's say, BP, or, you know, there are a couple who have had, you know, the former senator had a consulting contract with Evergreen. There are, I think, a couple who have consulting contracts with some of the oil-related industries. I think all you're required right now to do is say, $50,000 VECO, $50,000 BP, and that's it. So nobody knows what you did. And then nobody knows whether you're just consulting on, let's say, a marketing strategy, which might be okay, or whether you're consulting on something else, which might not be okay. So I think what you should probably require is that people do essentially a timesheet for if you're going to be in the legislature, I think you should probably have the obligation to let people know what you're doing. You should probably do a timesheet. You know, hour by hour, this is what I did. I think that would add a lot of integrity to the public process, and I would support something like that.
Sure.
On that point, I think, you know, not only I don't, you know, we could debate about whether it's a timesheet or at least a meaningful description that a reasonable person in the public could understand, however you translate that, whether it's, you know, detailed by day, detailed by hour, detailed by project, whether you want to attach a work product, whether you felt uncomfortable attaching a work product. Some people don't, and you can think of logical reasons why, if it were a proprietary document or something, you wouldn't want to. Whatever method of, again, showing a reasonable member of the public a meaningful description of what you're doing. I think the other side of that, and yeah, today, again, because it's informal, I want to talk about both. I want to talk about both executive ethics and legislative ethics, because I think what's happening in the public is the two are merged. And even if you look at the national level, it's getting merged there. But I think your idea, Les, is good in the sense as well that it gives a legislator a meaningful check as well. And that's part of the bright line issue that we experienced with the executive ethics branches. If somebody doesn't know what that line is, they're going along, and they may have the best intention. They may think what they're doing is ethical, is appropriate, is logical, and when they come back and explain it, you can see why they were going that direction, but without a concrete line in the sand, how do they know? And so I think if you had a disclosure rule that said, we value a citizen-based legislature, we do think you ought to work, I think at our wages, would we be on any kind of public assistance, or would we be close? So we don't want legislators on public assistance, we do want them working, but if they're going to do it, there really needs to be sort of a meaningful way that it can be transparent to the public and then let the public decide. John?
I would only caution that we could spend so much time on accountability issues that it becomes so burdensome that it's not worth any member to leave any employment and become a public policy official. So I think as transparent as it can be made is good. There might be things that people don't like but may not be unethical. Mm-hmm. And I think we sometimes mix those two. In the matter of a contract, it may be that it looks self-serving but is not unethical. And I wonder how close we get there, that we want to make everything legally unethical when it's just bad judgment in that it's self-serving, but it's transparent enough that it's not unethical. Mm-hmm. And so to me, if I wanted to vote for somebody, say, that I thought was just always making bad decisions, I don't know that I would actually call them unethical. I'd just say, I don't like that. The gal is using it as a place to help themselves out. But it's transparently that this is what happened. I think if there's one place we need to hold them for doing things underhandedly and hold them accountable for that, I'm game with that. But when it's open and transparent, I think you need to let the people who elect them be the judge of that. And I wonder if we're not robbing the judgment from the good citizens of Alaska. So I'm just cautious there. And there is a political side to that. You can play with that a little bit with headlines and whatnot. But to me, that rests on the good senses of the people of the state, whether it's those who write the newspapers or those who read them, or et cetera, et cetera. I think there needs to be a part of it that lays on the shoulder of society generally. Mm-hmm. But then when things are done in an underhanded way, that there needs to be an accountability for, I'm open to that. And so in looking at this, I say the hourly thing to me would be tremendously burdensome. I mean, I don't know what that would look like across a range of different professions and job sources, but if I was a mechanical contractor and I worked for 20 different places and each one of them presented a conflict, and I had spent half of my life writing up my hourly conflicts, it could be tremendously burdensome if I was like iron worker, like some of our, or who lend themselves out for contract,
mm-hmm.
who depend upon a good name to get contract bids. I think you just got to be careful, that's all. And so I remember when I first stepped up to be a legislator, between APOC reporting and reporting, what very little entanglements I had in this world, I still felt like that I was thought of as guilty before, you know, I mean, it's like you had to prove that you're innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I wonder if we don't put a cloud with the ethics, and I'm talking generally here, that there are some people that are thought to be less credible, and therefore they have to be held to the standard, rather than saying we really truly do. As I've been reading the purpose and applicability in both of these, and it's to encourage the best behavior and punish bad judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And if we assume that it's all bad judgment, I'm just concerned. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's where the burdensome parts of it, we got to be careful of, that we don't flip the switch over to where we just assume it's all bad judgment. But I think whatever we can do to create accountability. And with regard to the bill that is House Bill 194, I'm always reluctant when we put a dollar figure on anything. Because under that dollar figure, it still could be unethical. For example, if you have a blind trust is meant to put you in a position where it could be ethical.
Mm-hmm.
Could be $100 million, though. And maybe there's ways that you could manipulate beyond that. There also could be things that you could do under $5,000 would be just as unethical. It just wouldn't be as much of a big matter, but still unethical. So if the principle is unethical that we're looking at, I don't know that I want to put a dollar figure on unethical. I don't know. I haven't studied this out, but I know people that have given their character away for just a handful of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they're just as unethical as a guy that trades in $100 million. So I'm concerned about it, that's all. And I'll study it, but I just wanted to put the concern out.
Okay, I have Tom, Peggy, Max, and then Lex.
Thanks, Chair. First, I want to compliment Representative Guerra, because I think that you're not only being proactive but responsive to what happened with our Attorney General. And I think that the public wanted some answers and some definitions and delineation, and you're always quick to step up. I think, and I've seen that in other subjects too, where you're like, well, I have an idea. You don't have to agree, but at least I'm trying, and I'm going to try to forge ahead and mold this into what would be appropriate. Secondly, I won't speak to Representative Coghill's comment yet on the monetary amount, but I can speak from experience, having worked in contract, you know, VCOs won last year, that the difficulty is in terms of conflicts, and even recently I bought some stocks, the fear of having a conflict versus certain disclaiming. GM. Whoa. but the fear of and I had this kind of surface, what would be a conflict? I don't want to buy a state stock. I'm certainly allowed to do that, but I don't want to show some sense of impropriety. Or maybe we have to deal with legislation. It's that type of apprehension, and I think Representative Coghill touched on that, where we have to have a fix on it. For instance, do you put down times? Do you submit work product? I mean, I don't think you've gone that far, but pretty soon an employer would say, well, I don't want to hire you as a legislator because you have to reveal confidential information. Nor did I hear you say that you'd want that as an attachment. But I think that there has to be accountability, but also fairness. And I reference myself because even all of us have a trade, a lawyer. We have some folks in the oil industry, aviation industry, where they will have to vote on legislation that ties in with that, even if they haven't sponsored. So is enough to say, I'm Representative Samuels and work for Penn Air, or is it enough that he never joined the Transportation Committee because he might deal with something in aviation? Again, not that you brought that issue up, but it's that balance of how far and where can we interact as legislators with backgrounds and ownership of things and interests and spouses and friends and all these different connections. And I look forward to the debate and the analysis next session. Right now I chair the task force, Pete Kotz, resolution on gaming and a gaming commission, and we went through 3 hours yesterday. Representative Rubric helped lead that discussion on should there be a gaming commission, what would be the dynamic, what would be the organization, and I foresee parallel this committee and the debate being the same in terms of difficulty because everyone has an opinion and different experiences. And I hope that at minimum we can have a boilerplate similar to what Representative Garza's done in 194, even if we tweak the monetary amounts so that there is a bright line test for legislators in the future and candidates and others so they know what they're getting into and the public won't have the resentment that they did with the Attorney General's departure. Not necessarily against him, but against the laws not spelling that out. So I look forward to it, but I think that it definitely needs a fix. For clarification.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The concept, I think we do need to deal with it in some way so that it doesn't look like people are doing things when they're really not intending to. So I think it's very important that we somehow deal with it. But the timesheet situation, I think that too has a twofold problem. One is that it can be very, very time-consuming, and it might not tell anything, really. You just fill out a timesheet and say you worked here. It doesn't really tell what you're doing. But I think we have to come to some kind of an understanding of what needs to be said so that a normal John Doe out in the public will be able to understand easily what's going on, and he can make his own decision then whether he thinks it's ethical or not. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be very careful so that it's clear and concise, but very simple.
One of the things I'll do, and Max is next, one of the things I'll do too is have my staff ask Ledge Research, and I think this would be a good idea, the basic question of what other states who allow a citizen legislature, I think they all do, with the exception of California. California is a full-time. What other states do in this area? What types of statutes they have regarding disclosure of outside work and how they deal with conflicts. For example, I cannot remember which state, but I remember someone telling me once that they were allowed to abstain on a vote, actually allowed to abstain, and that it was when a conflict was presented that they felt they couldn't overcome, that they simply abstained from the vote, and they stated why on the record. But it may involve getting at it from a couple of different angles. So I'll have my staff look into that and try to get a matrix developed that would give more tools to the committee to think about how we address conflicts. And this is the legislative ethics component of it. So kind of allowing yourself to think in two different veins, the executive branch ethics and then the legislative. Max?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have Joyce Anderson, who's the staff for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics here, and she came at my request. We've been doing a lot, obviously, on that committee, and I'm wondering if she could come up and share with us a little bit what she really
sure.
Talked about.
Sorry,
and then I'll
Max,
have
Max sits on the ethics committee.
Yeah, and also on your committee on the future of state legislatures, which has been doing a lot on civility and ethics, and I'm on the state affairs committee too, so I seem to be right in there. We've talked about on that committee and just informally a number of these things, and I'm asking if she could maybe share some things that are going on, and then I'll maybe make a few brief remarks. Is that okay?
Yeah.
committee members, Joyce Anderson, staff of those what committee on legislative ethics. So we did have a meeting on September, I believe it was 27th, and discussed Senate Bill 187. We were only that's true about a third of the bill, and we were planning to have another meeting on December 9th, which is having fewer entries at the OEO. The committee felt that during the interim, they needed to look at the bill as well as your committee was looking at the bill. We didn't have time during session with the committee meetings and so forth. I think I've provided you with a couple of legal opinions that we asked for. One of them had to do with constitutionality, which we defined, if I don't know, it's fine. I believe Senator French also had requested about legal opinions from L.A. Avery, or our opinions were from our outside legal counsel. We'd also requested a legal opinion on the section.
Also requested a legal opinion on the section of the bill that dealt with a section that had to do with uniform rules. So you should have that legal opinion as well. And Brent Cole is our outside legal counsel. So that's what the committee has done so far. Actually, we were able to get through up through Section 7 of the bill. I have not had time to put the minutes together, of course, from that particular meeting, but we had some suggestions. We were going to be looking at the advisory opinion section. We felt it needed to be looked at. It's a little bit unclear as to what the process is and the procedure after our discussion, so we're going to be looking at that. The committee felt that the section regarding the $5,000 fine, the committee was not in favor of that at that time. The committee, when you talked about having language put in a couple years ago about counsel, language was also put in at that time that allows the committee to, or not allows, requires the committee to dismiss a complaint if it is made public. So the committee was really concerned about that as well, because there was a complaint that was made public maybe 4 or 5 years ago that was made public on TV. And so the committee had a lot of discussion about that, and they worked with the House and Representative Rothberg to have that particular part put in the bill. They felt that that probably helped the process, maybe not necessarily corrected it, but helped the process so that the person who files a complaint would be aware of the fact that the committee is required actually to dismiss the complaint. That doesn't prevent the committee from filing the complaint themselves if they felt it was egregious enough. So if the complaint was something that they felt really needed to be looked at, it would be left in the committee's hand whether they wanted to do that. It also allowed someone else to file the complaint, but not the individual who made the complaint public. So the committee had looked at that particular issue, and they felt that that was a concern. They felt that that when there is a complaint, it should not be made public, and it should only be made public after the fact if they go through the complaint process, and then the complaint, the subject of the complaint has been found to have violated the ethics code. So they were really concerned about that. I guess since the committee really hasn't gone through the entire bill, I won't comment on the rest of it, and if Representative Guerra wants to add a few comments as well. Well, one other thing, I did put together, which you should have, I provided to your staff, a sectional analysis of the bill. I did forward that over to legal. They had a couple comments, so I updated it this week, or maybe last week, with what their comments were. So basically, I've looked at the bill, and legal has looked at the bill for sectional analysis. So really, it's more of a just saying what happens in each particular section. And this would be Senate Bill 187, which is the legislative ethics bill.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I wanted to really, Ms. Anderson, to have you maybe mention not just focusing on the bill, but focusing on issues that have arisen that have captured the attention of the Select Committee. And that we have talked about, and I'll just sort of segue into it. It seems to me that the issue of ethics is something that has a lot of interest by the public on a continuing basis and by the press. And it's kind of a growing and changing subject with some issues that remain the same. But it's like any body of law that is the focus of constant attention as opposed to the rule against perpetuities.
Our favorite.
Right. Little known legal reliquaries, but the stuff that's really day to day. It faces public officials in all branches of government at all times. And so we constantly test it against a changing array of factual patterns. And as a result, you pass a law. And it's sort of like a tree. And then as the tree grows, you got to put more branches on it and leaves and make it so that it's workable and it meets the changing needs. And so it's something that we should, as a legislative body, look at from time to time. And actually, so should the judiciary and the bar. I mean, it's something that in all areas. And that's number one. So I think it's time, probably, that we take a look at this subject from a legislative ethics and executive ethics. And when we do it, I'm glad you're having this meeting because it focuses the attention. And we've talked about having some kind of ethical training for this legislature. That probably couldn't occur until the beginning of 07, because it's just going to take a while to pull it together. And we're looking at the select committee coming to the Ledge Council with a budgetary request to do that and pulling on some of the same people that you have had from your committee, Professor Doble and Peggy Kearns and folks like that, and Mike Josephson, who've been involved for many years. So that's number one, and I would like this committee to be involved with that as well. Some issues that have come up that I think need to be addressed, and we've talked, and the select committee, I think, is looking at maybe having some legislation put together to deal with a number of technical problems. And other phrases that have caused us some concern are, quote, matters of legislative concern, unquote. That's a phrase that appears in whether you are allowed to accept certain dollar amounts or certain types of gifts. And that's an undefined term and probably a term that ought to be defined. And what was the other term, Joyce?
Legislative purpose.
Yeah, legislative purpose. Also, the issue that has come up recently dealing with disclosures and not just stock ownership, but stock options, because stock option is something that you can buy or acquire at a very low cost, and when the stock's very low, and exercise it and you leverage the money. So if something happens, could really change the value of that much more than ownership of the stock itself, which is already at a high value.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the other technical kinds of things we've talked about that might be looked at in this legislation? Through the chair.
Madam Chair and committee members, the committee right now is having a bill drafted with some technical changes that I have recommended based on my experience over the last 5.5 years that have been left out of the code. For instance, when the Office of Victims' Rights was created, it wasn't put in the Legislative Ethics Code regarding the complaint process, whereas the Ombudsman is spelled out specifically. So we're putting some of those thoughts together. They're more technical than anything else, but they cover some areas that haven't been addressed. There's some language that we've added to the disclosure part of the statute because there were some left out when the disclosures were made part of the journal. And so there's some things like that. One of the other things that we're recommending in there has to do with the term of office for public members. We had some mix-up regarding whether they were 2 or 3-year terms, and they are 3-year terms. So now we have 5 public members, and 3 are up at once, and we would like to have some language that would correct that, so we would write. So we've prepared some language to put in this bill. It isn't ready from legal yet, or I would have had it for you today. But so we want to go back to where we have only two up at one time, and so we can do that with the 3-year staggered terms versus we couldn't do that when it was two. So we want to go back to the original setup of that. So we put some of that language in there. I'm trying to think of some of the others. Mostly more technical things that have been left out, other than the term thing, but left out that should have probably been put in and were overlooked at some point in time.
Mm-hmm. Chair?
Representative
Groomer. I'm not going to say a three-legged stool because it's not a stool, but we have the Legislative Ethics Act.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Executive Ethics Act. And then there's the Financial Disclosure Act under APOC.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I would recommend, and there are several committees involved in this committee in state affairs, and it seemed to be the two main standing, that we try to compile the bills that are together, including the one from that's being drafted by the Select Committee, and see from Brooke Miles or the folks on APOC if they feel there's stuff to do, and have a set of hearings on those three acts and any changes that need to be made.
It's a good idea. I think that's a confusing part, too, for, the assumption is that, members of the legislature know everything, all the laws and everything that's out there, and we try our best, but it's an unbelievable process, all of the paperwork and the different disclosures and the different acts, and even having inconsistencies between the Executive Act and the Legislative Act, I think, in some ways can be a recipe for disaster if you have a standard. It would be interesting to talk. I talked with Paul Seaton briefly, who's the chairman of the State Affairs Committee, and he mentioned the work that you all have started doing, again, toward the end in state affairs, and I think there might be an opportunity for our two committees, our two House committees, maybe to meet in a joint committee and discuss some of the things that are out there as well. I guess, too, Joyce, I'd love to hear any other suggestions. One of the things that, again, Max mentioned, I chair the Committee on the Future of Western State Legislatures, and this September meeting, we chose a year ago the topic of ethics, and we had a fantastic meeting with some experts from the Lower 48 that weighed in on things, but you got a chance to talk with colleagues about what they do in their states, and very few of them have a legislatively created ethics committee, and so, which surprised me. I guess I sort of thought everyone had that, and so they were very curious about this committee that we had created, but I'd be curious if you have any other thoughts about tools that you feel your committee doesn't have, things that haven't worked as well or gone as smoothly as you'd like. Pitch it to us as we're starting to amalgamate all this. Now's the time.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that in my research, I know the state of Washington just as of this year changed their committee on ethics, and they're set up very, very similar to ours. Matter of fact, it almost looks like they modeled some of their legislation after ours. I just received a copy of their handbook that I had asked that they sent to me. So as far as I know, I think there's Alaska and the state of Washington and possibly one other state that has an ethics committee that's made up of both public and legislative members. A lot of the ethics committees are made up of either the House or the Senate or a combination of both, but they're made specifically or exclusively, I should say, with legislators on the committee. So it's very interesting to read the one from Washington State, and I may have some suggestions after I finish looking at that because they tailored things a little bit different. One of the things that I think has happened over the years with ethics, I don't know if all of you are aware of it, but I am a part-time position. I only work 30 hours a week, or I should only work 30 hours a week, say that. As most of you know, I don't, but I am authorized to be paid for that extra day, so I am authorized. But I'm on a timesheet, not like the rest of the legislative staff. I would have to say that my experience, and I've talked to the chair about this, but really haven't brought it up before the committee, but I think that things have expanded in the ethics area, and I really feel like there are days when I need support. So I'd like to throw that out for the committee. You're asking for suggestions. I sometimes feel overwhelmed and overworked, let's put it that way. And so I have resourced some staff in other legislative offices from time to time. It would be nice if there was a contract person that could come in sort of on call to help with some of the work, such as putting packets together and so forth, because I feel that takes a lot of time, and then I don't have time to actually do other things that I feel are more important, such as, you know, responding to informal advice and questions and so forth and so on. So I just want to throw that out. I think things have progressed since I've been here. I know when I was hired, they had thought maybe the job might even, it would either expand or it would be reduced in the number of hours. I don't look at that as happening. I look at it as going the other way. So that would be one thing. To answer your question, I'd really have to go back and look at some of my notes. I know that there are some thoughts that I've had on certain changes to the ethics code. One of them, Senator Seekins, made some changes in the bill, had to do with the complaint process and regarding confidentiality, regarding the way that we deal with complaints. That particular statute is very difficult to read, and you'd have to read Section M to figure out what Section A really needs of that particular section. So those were some things. I haven't had a chance to really look at it to put that together, but I think if we're going to be looking at it, some of the things that he had in there I liked, and of course some I didn't, but you know, change some of the order of things in that particular statute. It's or it's 2460-170. It's a very long section. I think it goes up to like T or something like that for sections within that particular statute. And again, I mentioned earlier the advisory opinion part. I think that needs to be looked at. It can be rather confusing.
Can you be more specific on that?
Well, with the advisory opinion part, it says that the individual, there's two ways to request an advisory opinion. One is where you waive confidentiality, and one is where you don't. When you don't waive confidentiality, that means that the discussion of the advisory opinion will be conducted in executive session. The advisory opinion still does become public, but it's cleansed of any identifying, or hopefully of all identifying information. And I think that needs to be made clearer in the statute, basically because I think when someone requests a confidential advisory opinion, they think that it's never going to be released, but it is, because we use it as precedent for future questions and decisions and so forth. And if it wasn't made public, we wouldn't be able to reference it, you know, if another question comes up down the road. And so I think that the language in there, and we have talked about it at our committee meeting, and I've talked about it with Representative Groenberg as well, that we need to clarify that a little bit in there. Senator Seekins put something in his bill regarding advisory opinions, but I think it's still not very clear. So
only the new language requires advisory opinions to be released only if all parties who are required to be provided with the opinion agree.
Right, and I'm not sure that really...
Representative?
No, go ahead, and I'll just ask the question on that point, but go ahead.
I'm not quite sure, and I've had a discussion with Senator Seekins regarding that. I'm not quite sure why that's in there, because usually the advisory opinion is about a person. The person's, the action, let's say you're requesting, is about an action you're contemplating and that you would like to do, and so you're asking us whether you can do that or not. And the reason you're requesting an advisory opinion is maybe because I didn't want to answer it because I didn't feel there was enough information to provide it, or you yourself wanted to have something that was more formal and binding from the committee. So I'm not quite sure, and we've had this discussion, and I'm not quite sure I understood what he was saying, but I'm not sure why he had put that in there, because usually it's only about one person.
Okay.
So I just feel that the confidentiality part and that it's public and maybe the process needs to be more defined in the statute so that it's clearer.
And so, and just on that point before we get to Representative Garrett, your concern would be that, I mean, on the one hand, we want to encourage legislators to approach you for advice as often as possible to prevent themselves from getting into situations that might compromise their ethics. So whether it's over the phone or in writing, that's a goal we want to encourage. But your point is that trying to keeping the name confidential works, but keeping the entire opinion confidential kind of takes some of your tools away as a committee to be able to use those opinions for precedents in the future.
Exactly.
Okay.
And for instance, we Representative Guerra requested an advisory opinion, which we just discussed last week. And the reason is that we have a new section of the statute that became effective on July 1st of this year. And so I had received a request for some informal advice, and I didn't feel comfortable giving informal advice because there has not been any in the past to refer on or refer back to. So I suggested that an advisory opinion be requested, which then becomes a formal binding opinion from the committee. And so there's two ways, just for your clarification, there's two ways. you as a legislator can call me and ask for informal advice. If it's very clear in statute, I'd give you that advice with no other comment. If I feel like I need to say at the end of it, let's say you're asking about a disclosure, and that's pretty obvious, so I wouldn't say anything, but if you're asking for an interpretation of a particular statute, I'm required by statute to let you know that my advice is informal and not binding on the committee. And if you feel you would like to have something more formal and binding other than what I'm giving you, that's when you go to the formal binding advisory opinion request. So there's really two ways that you can do that. Most of the requests that come in are through informal advice that I give. And we've had two advisory opinion requests this year. Last year, I think we had three. The year before that, we probably had two. So it's not a lot that go into the advisory opinion, which becomes formal and binding, unless I feel that I'm not qualified to answer that question or the individual feels that they want to have it that way.
Okay. Representative Guerra.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Let me just address this one point, this one section of Senator Segan's bill, and then if I could at some point address the points that we raised. Ms. Anderson, I think what we're talking about is Section 6 of Senator Segan's bill, and that provision troubles me, too. That the current law is that if the person seeking the advice from the committee wants to keep the issue confidential, they can. And Section 6 says, in essence, if the complaint identifies somebody else who's subject to the ethics laws, the person subject to the ethics laws, possibly somebody who's violated the ethics laws, that person can also keep the opinion confidential. I guess it troubles me to expand the number of people who can keep an opinion confidential. This provision expands it to be a person subject to this chapter. So presumably somebody has either violated or not violated the ethics law. Just as a matter of policy, I think that's a bad idea to let that person also have the ability to keep an opinion confidential.
But if I could interject a minute, Representative Guerra, this is an advisory opinion, not a complaint, though. You're looking at it as I understand from what you're saying, you're looking at it as a complaint. It's an advisory opinion, which is a little bit different. It's actions that you are contemplating that you would request an advisory opinion. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and actually I was going to ask you that. Let me ask you this way, and then I'll just take your advice on it. It's talking about an advisory opinion, but it's now saying if an advisory opinion identifies a person, quote, subject to this chapter, so if somebody asks for an advisory opinion, they've said so-and-so may or may not have violated this chapter, I suppose, then it allows that person to also be one of the people that can keep the opinion confidential. Let me just ask you, what are your thoughts? Tell me if I'm missing something.
Basically, Representative Guerra, the only person that can request an advisory opinion has to do with actions they're contemplating. We will not look at a request if they're requesting it on actions of somebody else. Okay, does that answer your question? It answers your question, but doesn't really answer what you're in here. In my experience, I have never encountered an advisory opinion request that dealt with more than one individual. And so I'm not sure why this was put in here, unless there was some specific, unless Senator Seekins had some specific, someone had come to him or something and said that they thought that maybe the advisory opinion applied to them as well as the individual who requested it. I'm not sure, because usually it's on your actions. So in other words, we've had advisory opinion requests, like yours, for instance. You wanted to know how you could deal with constituents who call you regarding this new particular section without violating the new section, which has to do with the hearing officers and so forth. So it was action you were contemplating. Certainly it affects every legislator in this room and affects all legislative employees, but it was basically you were asking that. And so I don't know if that, if you mean that would open it up, that every legislator and every staff person would have to agree, I don't know. But I only look at it as you were asking that particular question and not for someone else.
Right.
Does that make
sense?
It does
make sense. And I think the goal of releasing those advisory opinions is for it to be instructive and consistent so that, when I read them, so we get them, and to be honest, I don't ever sit around and wonder who asked it. It doesn't matter to me. But you get an opportunity to see a thought process that someone was going through and how you would respond to it. And then that provides consistency so that you're not giving out advice to one member and that's separate from another, so that you could be accused of being partisan or of being inconsistent or so on. So, you know, I'm in agreement, I think, with that.
And really, an advisory opinion is more of an educational tool for everyone, as you're
right.
saying. You know, that's why we send them out, so that, especially with this particular one, which is brand new, and all of you are going to be dealing with constituents, whether it be PFDs or whatever it happens to be, we want to make sure that you're not in violation of this new particular
right.
section. So it's more instructional than anything else.
Representative Grunberg, and then after we're done with Ms. Anderson, we'll go back. You're next on the list to go into a new topic. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. What Ms. Anderson has been talking about but has not been saying brings up a thought with me. And it was something that you talked about a minute ago, too, Madam Chair. I think that we're seeing now, after the passage of a few years, that the creation of that Select Committee on Legislative Ethics was a good idea. Is there a similar committee dealing with executive ethics?
I don't know, Representative Grunberg.
If there isn't, should there be?
Question. Yeah, that's a good point. Peggy, Representative Wilson? Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Anderson, for your comments today, and we look forward to seeing a copy of your technical bill. Representative Grunberg.
Because, of course, I'm just thinking, the Commission on Judicial Conduct.
Right.
So it seems to me that of the three branches, two have. And if we're thinking about what we ought to do, I'd like this committee to think whether we should have a committee on executive ethics. So it's not just like an ad hoc thing on the personnel board, but we have a good quality standing committee that deals with it with public members, adequately staffed and funded.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a great thought for me, anyway, and that is if there's two
committees. Oh, yes, the Commission on Judicial Conduct is constitutionally created, and that was created before the Committee on Legislative Ethics, and now we've created this statutorily, and I think it's time we looked at whether there should be something like that for the executive branch, because it's by far the most numerous, most people involved, most complex problems, and they deserve to have, I think, the advantage of well-crafted body of decisions and informal opinions and a way of dealing with these problems for their own protection as well as the public's.
Follow up on that then.
Yeah,
My thoughts are just the fact that if Joyce has said that she really is having a hard time doing it all herself,
right.
and now it's been mentioned that there's another committee, maybe they could be to both or
share staff or
yeah, the committee could do both maybe, or I mean I don't know how that would work, but
May I respond, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
The thing arose, and I was in practice at the time, but not involved, when they created, it was originally the Committee on Judicial Qualifications, dealing with the separate, no, I understand, but there are canons of ethics for the judges, but legislators have their own set of problems, and civil service, career classified service, are slightly different, and then there are only two elected officials in the whole executive branch, the governor and lieutenant governor. The rest are all appointed. Some are political, most are not. And but I would not think that we should have them the same committee. That would just be a very difficult thing, sitting on that committee.
I didn't mean the judiciary one, but maybe the other ones.
Representative Koko.
Also, there's a separation of powers issue, so I think you'd have an awful hard time. So not only are they totally disparate, but they're really is a separation of powers issue, and
right.
I think that would be very difficult. It'd be kind of interesting, though, to find out what the personnel board actually does in practice
mm-hmm.
before I examine that.
Mm-hmm.
I think transparency is always a good thing, and always head for the transparency part of it. And I think the more hurdles you put in there, the harder it is to get transparency, and I think that's why we're having this discussion here. But we do have probably one of the most powerful chief executives in the union, and between those politically appointed positions, including our chief lawmaker, there has been struggles on what has been good judgment and what's been ethical or unethical judgment. So it'd be kind of interesting if we had somebody from the personnel board